الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على محمد الأمين. فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Welcome back to the class. I'm not sure if Ramadan has already started for you guys, but if it has, happy Ramadan. I wish you have a good month of thinking, reflecting about your faith. This is like the best time. This is the most virtuous time that Allah has put on the calendar for us to reconnect with His book and to sort of, what's the right word, to embody our commitment to our faith and to embody our obedience to God. That's what Ramadan is about. In fact, I'm thinking maybe next week we'll take a little break from the regular topic and maybe we'll just talk about Ramadan for a change, just because it's very timely. We are in this month. Let's see. The question: are we not off next week? Huh, that's a I okay. We might be. I don't know. Is there a reason for that? Can you tell me? There's a message on the chat. Easter holiday. Okay. So if you're off, you're off. We'll do it the following week. So I'm not. I wasn't talking from a schedule perspective. I probably overlooked something. So if we're off, we're off. That's no problem. And but whenever you come back, I guess we're going to meet. We're probably going to have at least two more classes during Ramadan, and maybe we can talk about that. And if you guys have questions, we can address those as well. So with that, let me get back to our topic that we have been discussing. Just do a quick recap of it, and then we'll move on. So we've been talking about a topic that is very current, very here and now. It's on everybody's mind because it's a big social issue, especially in the Western world. Probably I would say everywhere, but more so in the West, where many of us live. It is a basic civil rights issue. From many angles of the problem, because we are living in a time where, fortunately, many of the people who have been marginalized in one way or the other, whether that group is women, whether that group is minorities, racial discrimination or suffering from racial discrimination or any other kind, we have seen a positive change in the last, I would say, 40, 50 years, where finally people's equal existence is being recognized. And I think the homosexual, LGBT, gay community has made the point from that perspective very effectively, and they have raised the level of consciousness among the larger population that just because they have a certain difference from the majority of the population, that doesn't mean they should be discriminated against. I think we should be very clear in our discussion as well, because sometimes certain religious pronouncements about a certain type of people can lead people to go overboard in terms of their response to that information. And it can turn into a way to marginalize, to discriminate against, and so on. We want to be very careful not to do that, because that would be very inconsistent with with the teachings of our faith and the teaching of our scripture, the Quran. Because the Quran sets the standard for good conduct. Sets the standard of distinction based on good conduct, not based on a particular label. Even if that label is saying that I am a follower of Islam, that itself doesn't give me or you any distinction over anybody else. What matters is what is my conduct after I have adopted that label. So to discriminate against people based on a certain label or certain distinguishing characteristic, which is not of their, especially if it's not one that is not of their own making, is totally antithetical. Antithetical is a heavy word, I know, but it means it's like grossly in conflict with the teachings of our faith. So anyway, we were discussing, where were we? I think we started with the homosexuality discussion generally from the Quran, that it's not acceptable conduct because it's against the nature and the norm, it's against the rules of physical purification, and purification being the one of the core drivers of a good life lived according to the message of our faith. Okay. And then we said the people of the prophet Lut or Lot were not punished due to homosexuality alone. They were punished for other criminal behavior as well. That included homosexuality. So I think we have to be careful not to twist the words of the scripture either, saying, well, they were not punished for homosexual behavior, but they were only punished for something else. Now, I think if most scholars will say there was two aspects to it. Both of those were there. Those who are born with homosexual tendency are not sinful just by having it. The struggle to resist acting on it is highly meritorious, like many desires a person. So I think we made a distinction, and it's a difficult point to make because, you know, it may come across as insensitive. People can be born with a lot of tendencies that could have a sort of a negative impact on the society. And it may be that they were just born with something like that. And the society doesn't encourage them to act on it because it could be harmful for somebody else. So I think that the distinction here is that if somebody had a tendency to be violent, we don't recognize that as something that should be encouraged or should be promoted as normal behavior in a person because it could be harmful to the other. In the case of homosexuality, there's a tendency that doesn't have that reason. I mean, it's not necessarily harmful to the society in the way that somebody having a violent, you know, behavioral tendency, because it could harm another person. So I think that's a distinction that the modern, you know, world has made, that If I have a tendency that is built into me, which is not harmful to the other, then the society should leave me alone. And I think for most part that's the right thing to do. And I think if you remember, we talked about the distinction between what is sinful behavior and what is a criminal behavior. The criminal behavior is one where the force of law comes into play to stop you, to stop the person who's offending. So if I were to, you know, snatch somebody's mobile phone and run away, that will come under a crime. It'll certainly, most certainly, it'll be a sinful behavior also, because I'm doing something which is in stark conflict with the teachings of my faith or any moral code on the planet. But it will be a criminal behavior as well, and it may not be punishable by, it will be punishable by law, as opposed to something that I do, which is, let's say I backbite people, you know, while that is a very grave sin, you know, the Quran and other scriptures are very clear about that, that backbiting is, may seem, feel harmless or sound, you know, insignificant, but it's a very big sin. However, there's no law against it. This is not something which will come under the jurisdiction of the law. Nobody can you know, take me to court because I backbited someone. So that's where we make a distinction. So I think we have to make a distinction that we feel this is this behavior that we're talking about is obviously one that our scripture and most religious, you know, traditions consider as acting on them sinful, not having that tendency. That tendency itself is not sinful, but acting on that and making that, in turning that into a lifestyle is sinful. But the responsibility of declaring something sinful and acting on it is not in, within our, you know, job description. Something that is sinful and not criminal, society will not take any action on, and God will leave it to God and the Day of Judgment to be for that to be, you know, judged. And God is the best of the judges, you know. So we don't have to what's the right word? We don't have to elevate ourselves to the position of God and start judging people in that sense. So we don't judge people based on sinful behavior, because that's the domain, or that's the area of responsibility for God. We only respond to things which are, which fall under the jurisdiction of the law, which is primarily driven by whether somebody harmed another person or not, or another entity. It doesn't have to be a person. It could be another. I mean, you could be harmful to a company. It could be harmful to the state. You could be harmful to some other entity, institution. So anyway, so we talked about that. So we should refrain from passing judgment on such people. Judging the salvation of others is exceeding our limits. Again, so that so. Sometimes we are very quick to pronounce people as ones going to hell or heaven. There's not a whole lot of problem if you're sending people to heaven. Honestly, that's you're probably being kind to them and you're expressing a hope. It's like making a dua for someone. But to condemning people to hell is a very, very serious matter. Because what you're doing is you're basically passing a judgment on something on which you do not have enough information. You don't have the whole picture. We don't have the ability to simulate the mind of God on how He's going to judge people on that day, and it's even if we were close to doing that, which we're not, even if we were close to doing that, if we were to have that capability, it will still be not justified, because it's not in our job description. Allah has never asked us to decide on the fate of who's going to heaven and who's going to hell. We should be much more concerned about things which are within our own control, which is, you know, how we live our lives. It's not exactly on the same topic, but somewhat similar message is in one of the hadiths of the Prophet ﷺ, when somebody came to him and asked, O Prophet of God, when will the hour be established? Hour meaning the Day of Judgment. When will the Day of Judgment, you know, come? And I think this person asked a couple of times, and the Prophet asked, What have you prepared for it? Meaning, rather than getting hung up on this question that when is the akhirah is going to happen? When is it coming? Is it tomorrow? Is it next week? Is it next month? Is it going to be 10 years from now? Is it going to be 100,000 years from now? Rather than, getting all wound up on a question to which we have no information, even the messenger of God or the angels of God do not know this. Instead of focusing on that, focus on how are we preparing ourselves to face that day? So I think something similar goes here as well. Any questions, comments, guys? Okay. So we then I'm recapping. We talked about we differ from people in many dimensions. We talked about there's based on our gender, based on our identity, based on the language we speak. So there's lots of different dimensions along which people differ. And we should look at that diversity as an asset, as a plus, not as something on which based on which we should divide people and discriminate against them. There's a beautiful verse in the Quran that talks about this. I don't remember exactly the reference where it is, but it talks about the fact that I'm paraphrasing that God created us into different, different skin colors and languages and other differences, not so that we discriminate each other negatively, but so that we recognize each other. It gives us an identity, and if we just leave it at that, and we can be proud of our identities, that's fine. But as soon as we start to say, well, just because I'm a certain skin color, I'm superior to a person of a different skin color, that's where the problems start. Or the fact that I speak the English language and somebody else speaks, let's say, the Urdu language, and therefore one is inferior or superior to the other. That's the problem. Or the fact that I'm an Arab and I'm superior to a non-Arab or vice versa. And there's hadith of the Prophet where he uses that as an example. So the only distinction that the Quran recognizes for superiority is your good conduct. And good conduct is often not something that you can judge for yourself. So good conduct is going to be judged by God. So in the eyes of God, the one who is more meritorious, more deserving of respect is the one who lives with good conduct, which is why there's so much emphasis in the Quran on really, I mean, it's like you can count these ideas on few fingers on your hand that the Quran keeps emphasizing is to believe in God, to believe in the Day of Judgment, to do good, amala salihan, and really that's really the core of it. And then these are the big headings, and there's lots of details under those headings, of course. But it's the message of the Quran is not one that requires a PhD to understand, honestly. It's simple. So anyway, so I think I'm repeating myself here, so I'll stop. So we had this nature versus nurture debate, what is built into us, and what is it that we learn from our environment. Those topics come into discussion sometimes in these things, but I think we'll just summarize that and move on because we covered this slide last time. We accept some restrictions when we join an institution, whether that be like, I have to wear a blue uniform, that's the only way I'm going to go to a certain school, or I have to avoid certain type of political talk when I'm at work, and so on. We accept that. So I guess we could justify that the homosexual behavior is one that when we are, you know, accepting the message of God, then we are implicitly, you know, accepting that as a some sort of a restriction put on us. We can struggle. I mean, we will struggle. Somebody who has that will struggle with it, with that thing for a long time. And the only thing, unfortunately, we can offer in that case is that that struggle will be highly, highly meritorious in the eyes of God, because to struggle against yourself is the greatest jihad, which is highly valued in the eyes of God. But again, it's easier for someone like me to say that to another person, and it's very hard to live it. So we have to be really, we have to be very humble and modest when we talk about these things. Okay, modesty mandates putting restriction on many matters of sexual relation, not just homosexuality. So yeah, we have this point. So it's not like the Quran is saying, well, homosexual behavior is discouraged and all kinds of heterosexual behavior is fair game. No, it has put tremendous limitations on that, on the other side as well. It has only allowed you know, sexual relations in a heterosexual environment when it's covered under the institution of a marriage, which, if you think about it, is a very, very small set of options available to people. It's very small, and it comes with heavy responsibility, and it comes with it is intended to make sure that the human beings, when they have children, they continue to have the commitment and resources to take care of those children. So it's coming from that perspective. I think we had that discussion in earlier classes. Okay, learning from Hajj as a theme, how we struggle against our inner self. So that's just repeating the point. And then finally, we said distinguishing between crime and sin. Okay, and now we're going to go to the next slide, which we didn't cover last time. And I see we have a good turnout today. Let me just take a look. So if anybody has any questions, comments, complaints, or anything to share at this point, you can speak up, or you can, you know, send something in the direct message to me, or send a message to everybody. I highly welcome any feedback of any sort. Okay, so there are many references to the story of Lot or Lut in the Quran, and I mentioned those on the top if somebody is interested in researching this. First example of widespread practice of homosexuality. So I think it is one thing to think about it, about that story. Basically, the story goes something like this, that the people of the Prophet of Lut had not only this behavior as their tendency at an individual level, but it was widespread practice among the society, and any questions or stigma against it had been neutralized, and it had become a completely acceptable behavior, to the extent that if anybody sort of deviated from it, their safety could be endangered. Okay, so it was expressed in a very public manner. When advised to refrain, they threatened to banish Lut and his family. So it goes beyond just saying, well, this is our right, leave us alone. It's like saying that, you know, if you tell me to not do something, not only I'm going to keep doing it, but I'm going to actually have you're going to pay some consequences for it as well. Okay. So when advised to refrain, they threatened to banish Lot and his family, challenged and taunted Lot to bring about the promised punishment. Well, that's a common thread that you will read in the Quran with almost all of the messengers. Because the fact that the messenger comes with a message and doesn't have the power to enforce that message until a certain time when God takes sort of matters in his own hands and punishes people. Until that time, people are free to, mock the messengers. People are free to make fun of them. People are free to taunt them for whatever they're preaching. And that's what these people did. And one of the taunts that you'll see referenced frequently in the Quran in the context of messengers is that they are mocked by people who are not believing in their message, saying that you keep talking about this day of judgment, and we're gonna wake up from the dead, and all this will happen. So when is it coming? Well, just show us, show me. Like, just stop, enough already. You've been talking about this for years and years and years, and just show us so that we can believe it. So that's sort of behavior that happens a lot. And then threatening behaviors toward Lot's guests, which were the angels that had descended from God to visit him, about allowing them in, and threatened to approach the guest with a lustful tendency. So they were. This is like you're transgressing all kinds of limits here. Their acts described as foul deeds, the attitude, an attitude toward the acts as wicked, ignorant, disobedient, and transgressing. So this is how the Quran is characterizing it. Lot expresses personal dislike of their behavior too. Lot's people accuse him to be acting overly pure, pious. That's another taunt. Okay, so you are when you say something, when you remind people of something that you think is virtuous and they don't agree with it, they can make a taunt by saying, "Well, you are putting yourself on a pedestal. You are very high and mighty, and we're lowly, sinners here." So that's sort of the sarcastic, feedback that you have to endure if you're trying to act on something that you truly believe that in your heart. Sometimes you face that in life, and I think that should not deter people from their commitment to what they believe in. If anything, it should strengthen their resolve to stay at it. And nobody has a higher resolve than the messengers of God, who have been put in some of the most distressing, circumstances. It's a trial for them as well as individuals, actually. And of course, it's a trial for their audience and their communities that they came to deliver the message to. But that's all part of the package. So I'm gonna stop here and allow anybody to make a comment and ask me any questions. Let's go around the table here. Let me ask Taha. I'm not sure if you were here in the last couple of classes, but what's your feedback on the topic so far? Is it helping you? Is it making sense? What is it that we're missing? And just anything like that. Just share some feedback. Taha, you there? Okay, so Taha is, I guess he may have a problem with his mic or something. You think it makes sense? It's a much needed topic. Okay. Let me ask Shahir R. Just making sure everybody's, wide awake. I'm just kidding. So Shahir, you have any comment? Shahir R. Okay. No questions, pretty clear. Shahir without the R, just Shahir. Please, somebody unmute and speak up so I don't feel like I'm just dictating to you guys here.
No question.
I'm sorry, say again. Hello, was that Hashim?
Yeah, I said I don't. There's no.
Okay. Rida.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear, and like Taha said, it's like pretty needed, I think, nowadays.
Yes. And you know, I must confess to you guys, it's not an easy topic to teach either. So I kind of struggle with it also, because I don't want to. The challenge is this: I don't want to put my words into the verses of the Quran. At the same time, I don't want to interpret those verses in an insensitive, you know, manner that is going to be, you know, judgmental to certain people, because that's really not, that's against the teachings of our faith also. So we have to be careful, that's all. And you know, the best thing in times like that, for you guys are going to be in my place at some point, the best thing to do is to be humble. When, you know, one of the best things you can respond with in times like this is say, when you're not sure, you just say, I don't know, you know, I can look it up, I don't know. I don't know is not a bad answer, you know, in many cases. It just shows a person's humility and the fact that they're a human being. Okay, so let me see who is left. Shahir, did we hear from Shahir? Okay, maybe Shahir is not at his desk right now. Hania?
Yeah, I still understand. I don't have any questions.
Okay. Okay, well, that's good. That's encouraging to know. Everybody's following along. Okay, so I'm going to continue responding to LGBT for Islam. Now, this is sort of the summary of, you know, sort of the practical aspects of some of the interacting with trans people now and historically. You know, this is an interesting thing to study in this whole topic, because the T in LGBT is transgender. So these are people who don't have a clear, who don't, we don't say have or not have, because we don't, there's no way for us to know, but they don't identify with either of the genders that we think of ourselves in as male and female. They have, so this is called the non-binary gender. You know, binary means, binary is something which only has two choices. Like when I say, are you awake? The response to that is yes or no. It's a binary response. But if I say, how old are you? That's not a binary response. You can say any number between, you know, let's say 15 and 20, 22 or something like that. Or depending on the audience, it could be a much, much wider range. So there are people who have not identified with the binary response to gender identification, and they're called transgender. So because the trans means they sort of span a spectrum. It's a spectrum, you know. It's like a continuous thing between, it's not just black and white, but there's a lot of gray in between, and they somewhere fall in that gray. Now, interesting thing is, I don't know about, you know, I can't say that it about everywhere in the world, but in much of the Muslim societies, the transgender people have existed. And they have existed, I wouldn't say they were afforded like full rights as everybody else, but they were, at a minimum, they were tolerated. And toleration is not a desired goal. I think we should treat people much better than just tolerate them. However, it wasn't like they were persecuted. They were put in certain positions in the society where they could at least, you know, live their life. Typically, it would be a situation, for example, if you go back like 100 years from today, in a typical Muslim society, the social quarters of men and women were sort of, you know, separated. It's not like they were, you know, they were, had too many social interactions where people of both genders were present. So there was a women's section in the house or a public place, and the men's part. And the transgender people would be the ones who would be allowed to go back and forth. So you wanted to, you know, communicate a message from one side to the other. If it's like a palace or something, so they were trusted for those kinds of jobs. It's not, I'm not saying this is a great, a recognition of an individual, but at least they were not scorned, that they weren't discriminated against just for being who they are, and they were found, they would find, some useful service they could provide in the society. So anyway, that's just interest, kind of an interesting tidbit there. Treat all humans as humans first. I think that's something that is worth emphasizing a lot. The Quran says, what's the verse? I think it says, "Walaqad karramna bani Adama," or we have ennobled the children of Adam and Eve. What does ennoble mean? Ennoble means somehow we have placed a higher value on them than other creatures. Right? So, and what's the meaning of children of Adam? That means human beings. In fact, if you go to a language like Urdu, the word for a human is Admi. Admi comes from Adam. Okay, so it's not it's almost like a direct translation. So we have to recognize individuals as human beings first before we put any other label on them. Whether that label is one of religion, whether that one label is one of race, language, ethnicity, gender, anything. I think we have to treat people as human beings first. And it's fun. The funny thing is, this is something which is hardly a controversial statement. I don't think too many people will disagree with it. However, it has been a tremendous challenge throughout history. And I would argue even today, it is a tremendous challenge to live that ethic and that value system. And it's easier to talk about it than to practice it, because we are complex beings, and we learn to identify with a certain identity, and we take pride in it, and sometimes that pride extends to other in a negative manner, meaning if I'm part of the blue team here, then I'm against the red team, and somehow there's something wrong with the red team. So it's something that's something to be thinking about. I think Islam is asking us to, get beyond that. It's not saying that my identity as a Muslim is not important. It is very important. But I'm a human being first, I shouldn't be, if somebody is against, has negative feelings toward Islam, that does should not justify them to treat me badly, because I'm a human being first. So anyway, I think you guys get the idea. We should express our opinions with civility and without judgment. Okay, what does that mean? And this could be actually an important thing for you guys in general. And I'll tell you what my personal experience is. My personal experience is this: if you can speak with respect and without being judgmental, meaning you're not out there to implicate guilt in another person, the one you're talking with, and you're talking to them with respect. If you follow these two rules, you can disagree with anybody on the earth, and most likely you will not have, in most cases, you will not have a backlash from them. Because what you're doing is you're saying, "Well, I respect you. I don't judge you negatively for what you believe or what you espouse as a value system. However, I disagree with what you said for these three, four, five reasons." And you lay out the reasons, and none of the reasons violate those two rules. You can be talking to the president of the country. You can be talking to the principal of your school. You could be talking to the chief executive officer of a company that you work at. And they will be forced to listen to you and respond to you with civility and without judgment also. And I believe that's what Quran is teaching us to do as well. Because the emphasis of the Quran is constantly to bring the message to people and then asking them to find flaws in it and, you know, bring evidence for what they're believing in. So that evidence, the evidence is that reason or the rationale for doing something that becomes the basis of a civil dialogue. Civil means we react to each other in a civilized manner. There are certain logical fallacies, one of which is called shooting the messenger. So what happens in that fallacy is that if I disagree with something you said, and I don't have a good answer to it, but I don't want to accept it either. So instead of responding to the message, I attack your person. And I say something like this: well, you remember that other time you said so-and-so, and the next day you change your mind? So how can I even listen to you? But that's not fair. That was another time. Even if that remark is true, that was for another time. I am proposing to you something that I firmly believe in. I think I am convinced of the truth of it. Just respond to the matter. Like somebody said, you know, it doesn't matter who is right. It doesn't matter who is right. What matters is what is right. So it can come from anybody. So don't focus on the messenger. There's another logical fallacy that you'll learn about if you ever study critical thinking. This is called a straw man. A straw man is you take somebody's argument, right, and you twist it into a caricature of that argument, and then you start attacking that caricature or a straw man. And then you say, well, I proved that you're wrong. Well, but you didn't prove that I'm wrong because you didn't address the argument that I was making. You sort of made a caricature or a mockery of it, and then you proved that the mockery was ridiculous. So I mean, we have to be fair. We have to be fair in our communication. We have to be compassionate in terms of listening to the other people and so on. We have to be very compassionate, especially when criticizing people. It is irresponsible to criticize somebody or their argument without really understanding it first. If I don't understand your argument, I don't have a right to criticize you. I should be able to relate your argument with such clarity that you thank me for it. Only then I get the right to criticize you. Okay, fundamental values of Islamic civilization are modesty, reverence for the elders, and compassion for the young, advising to do good and refraining from bad. So these are something that you'll find in the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet and so on. These are some of the values, and I think if we live those values, we would end up in the right place with regard to responding to anybody with an LGBT identity in our society. Observe the best of manners when advising. Okay, this is another. This I think we've probably discussed this. This another verse of the Quran that is very helpful in a situation like this. It talks about calling people to the way of God with wisdom and beauty as a beautiful reminder, and debate with excellent manners. Okay. Udu ila sabili rabbika bil hikmati wal ma'izati al hasanati wa jadilhum billati huwa ahsan. Meaning you don't, I mean, if you want to debate, if you want to talk to somebody, there are manners for that. We don't, you know, engage in sort of a fist fight, you know, when it comes to argument. And we don't accuse people. We don't judge their intentions. So if we're following the general Quranic guidance, I firmly believe we'll sort of land on our 2 feet in the right place on most of these complex issues. When God has given respite for action, who are we to intervene? You know, God has given respite. Respite means a leave, a long leave to do something negative. God has given the devil a respite or a leave until the day of judgment to do whatever bad stuff he wants to do. The devil, I mean, whatever bad stuff the devil wants to do, he can do that. What he is not given the power is to twist my arm and make me do something, but he's been given power to kind of whisper in my ears about all kinds of bad stuff. So if God can give respite to people until the day of judgment, there's no reason I, as an individual human being who has very meager existence of my own on this earth for maybe 50, 60, you know, less than 100 years, I mean, who am I to intervene and you know, cut that process short? And then even the Messenger of Allah, Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, all the other messengers before him, Quran reminded him, indeed we have sent you as a reminder, as a warner, not a compeller. Compeller is somebody who can force your hand to change your ways. A warner or a reminder is somebody who will remind you, like I will remind my children that, you know, be mindful of your prayers. Pray 5 times a day. And I'm going to keep reminding them, you know, for a long, long time. But does that mean I can, you know, I can grab them and physically force them to do that? No, that's not. Even the Prophet of Allah was told that his job is not to compel people. So if what the point I'm trying to make is, guys, you're going to face lots of difficult topics in life, and which will be very difficult to parse, very difficult to process, very difficult to understand, respond to. But if we follow the general Quranic guidance on our rules of engagement with other people, how we speak, how we not judge people, how we not question their intention, how we respect, you know, people for just being people, how we treat them as human beings first. 9 out of 10 times, you will land on your 2 feet in the right place. It will develop a sense of a certain type of personality, which will enable you to be mindful of the limitations of being a human being and not exceed that and not be too arrogant, be very humble, be very compassionate, be very, what's the right word? Empathetic. You know, it's very easy to criticize somebody. It's hard to put yourself in their shoes and still criticize. So I think, and that is really that's the core of the faith. In addition to, you know, belief, the fundamentals of beliefs, it is the good character, good moral character that is the backbone of our faith and of most, you know, religious traditions around us. And I think we have to be mindful that we don't become people who do not recognize these, both the aspects of our, you know, faith. Faith is about our relationship to God as well as our relationship to human beings and other, you know, everything around us. And it's the whole, that whole spectrum that matters. Anyway, I kind of just went a little long-winded today, but hopefully it is all kind of connecting in some way. And we're almost out of time. And I will, you will hear from somebody within the school staff whether there's an Easter break for the class next week. And if there's a class, we will meet. If there's no class, we'll meet the week after. And I wish you guys, all of you, a very, very happy and fruitful Ramadan. This is the month to get closer to God, to get closer to the Book of Allah. And hopefully you guys are able to benefit from it. And I pray for myself as well. I because it's very easy to get distracted. And inshallah, we'll have some more discussion on Ramadan as well in our next class. Thank you all. You guys are good students, and talk to you next time. Assalamu alaikum.